I have a theory that we get certain ideas in our heads, and those ideas govern our view of reality, and in fact, those ideas can sometimes distort the reality that's right in front of our faces. They color our vision, these ideas that we have. Rather than help us, they distort. I remember when our son James was entering the fourth grade, and there was a teacher in the fourth grade whom he did not want to have. She had a reputation as being mean and hard to get along with, inflexible and tough. You know where this is going, don't you? Well, of course, he was assigned to Mrs. Wagner's class. And his tears and his distress were unmanageable. He was going to have a terrible year in school, and he knew it because everyone had told him and everyone knew what a terrible teacher she was. And of course, she turned out to be one of the finest teachers he ever had in his life. But he had this idea in his head that she was mean, and that idea colored his view of reality and distorted it. And it took him quite a few weeks, months perhaps, to get with the program and realize that this lady was really out for him. And she was a fine, fine teacher. But that idea he had in his head distorted that reality. Did that ever happen to you? Did you ever have an idea in your head that distorted? You know, you heard about somebody and, you know, they're a terrible person and you get to know them and it just doesn't fit. They're not the terrible person that was described to me. Or, well, any number of ways it can happen. I have a terrible fear of heights. I struggle to climb a ladder taller than me, and I know that's not a very tall ladder. And if I get on a building and get close to the edge and it's several stories off, I back up. I don't like to be there. That's very uncomfortable for me. And when I was a kid, one of my most unnerving experiences was when I was a kid, we were visiting Gettysburg with my grandparents, and on near the Gettysburg battlefield, there's a fire tower right next to the Eisenhower farm, and you could, in those days, you could go up on that fire tower and see the Eisenhower farm. Well, I couldn't make it past the first landing on that fire tower, and I had to stand on the ground and watch my little sister and my 70-year-old grandmother climb that thing to the top while I couldn't get much off the ground. And I was told that since I had such a horrible fear of heights, that I couldn't ride a roller coaster and that I just better never even try to ride. And so I didn't. I never rode a roller coaster until my children challenged me to do it one day. And I got on the roller coaster at Hershey Park, and I loved it. And I can't ride enough of them now. I can't get on them enough. But I was 40 years old before I ever got on. I wasted all that time because I thought I couldn't ride them. I had this idea in my head that distorted my life and the reality that I was seeing. Sometimes we have those ideas in our head that are not helpful, that are not right. They are wrong ideas and they distort the reality that's in front of us. When we read the prophet Isaiah, quickly we encounter his memorable vision. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Remember, Isaiah was living at a time when war was going on all around him. But we have this idea in our heads, don't we? We have this notion in our heads that prophets foretell the future, that their visions and their hopes are for the distant future. And that's a wrong idea. We've got to get over that. Just like my son's idea that Mrs. Wagner was a horrible teacher, and my idea that I couldn't ride roller coasters, those ideas distort what we read. That idea distorts what we read in the prophets. The prophets, Hebrew and Christian, have as their primary task to proclaim the word of the Lord, not to foretell the future. But we have this idea in our heads, and we hold on to this notion that Isaiah and all the prophets, but Isaiah too, talking about the future. So what he has to say really doesn't matter to me. It doesn't have any effect on me because he's talking about the future. So I want you to look for a moment at what Isaiah really says. Go back to the first line of his oracle. In the days to come, he said, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains. And on he goes. Did you hear it? He says, in the days to come. Doesn't sound to me like he's talking about some distant future. In the days to come. Could be later this week. Or maybe next week. Or a month or two at the most. But he says, in the days to come, it sounds pretty imminent, not decades or centuries or millennia off into the future. And then he says, in just a couple more verses, O house of Jacob, come let us walk in the light of the Lord. So he was talking to people then and there. He says, come now. Come let us walk in the light of the Lord. And when Isaiah is speaking, he's not only speaking to the people who gathered around him 2,800 years ago. He's speaking to us too. And he says the same thing to us. Come now. Let us walk in the light of the Lord. Let us beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks and not learn about war or make war anymore. Isaiah's words portray a present blessing, not a future promise. Isaiah's words portray a present blessing, not a future promise. He speaks of God's great dream for people then and now, not of something that God is holding on to and hiding and keeping away, preserving for people in some distant future time. But we let ourselves off the hook, you see. We give ourselves an excuse to hold on to our conflicts and our greeds and our hatreds and our prejudices. When we push God's dream into a future time, into a distant future time, when we confine God's values to a distant time and thus make God's intentions for God's people unattainable. We let ourselves off the hook. We can't do these things. These things aren't meant for us. They aren't intended for us. This is God's plan for the future, you see. And we let ourselves off the hook. And we give ourselves permission to hold on to our angers and our hostilities and our hatreds. And not create pruning hooks out of spears. Allow ourselves to continue to make war and to do the things that we do that are not part of God's dream. Not part of God's plan or God's hope for our world. The idea that the prophets foretell the distant future, a time in which we do not yet live, which God will bring about when God is ready, is an idea that distorts the reality that this vision, Isaiah's vision, is God's word, God's intention, God's desire for us today. We shall beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall we learn war anymore. If our lives are integrated with God's values, that's the way we will live. That is Isaiah's vision for his people, but also for us. O United States of America, he might say now, come let us walk in the light of the Lord. But we let ourselves off the hook. Because it's too hard for us to look at ourselves, to admit our own failures and our own sin. For as good as our nation is, and there is great and deep goodness within us, throughout our history and in the present time, it is well that we sing appreciation to God for the liberty that we enjoy and for those who have given their lives to create it and preserve it. There is good and deep goodness within us. But at the same time, we have too often preferred war and made war at times when it was not necessary. We make too much money from the sale of weapons of war throughout the world, and we gain too much from the conflicts of other nations. to begin to claim God's dream for us and for our world. And that's exactly what was going on in Isaiah's day as well. And so we take Isaiah's vision, God's dream, and we push it off into the future so that we don't have to face our unwillingness to embrace God's vision today. Jack Jones was a Welsh coal miner's son. And in his autobiography, he tells us a terrifying story of something that happened to him when he was a child. He was in the mine shaft with his dad. He was probably too young to be there, but he went to work with dad one day, deep in the mine, when something went wrong. There was a radical cave-in, and the way out of the mine was blocked for the miners and for this boy. But it was an ancient mine. It had been there for many, many years. And there were old shafts and tunnels that went everywhere. And in some of those tunnels, because they were so old and unused, there had gathered gases in the air and water on the ground. So it was a treacherous place to be. Jack's father happened to be one of the older miners and one who was best acquainted with the old mine. And so he took his son on his back. And he held him there with his son's arms around his neck. And he led his fellow miners through the dangerous ground, through the tunnels and the shafts to try to find a way out. As they moved through the mine in the foul air, the open flames of their lamps began to weaken. "Be careful, son," Jack remembers his dad saying. "Hold fast around your dad's neck." And as they reached the dark water, he knew it was a treacherous place. They waded in through the water gathered in the mine shaft, and they traced their way through the murky water, coming almost up to his dad's neck. That's how deep it was. And as they got through the water, they started up a steep incline. And his dad said, "Won't be long now." They kept climbing for some time, though, and he reached a point where he stopped and he knelt down. And he put his son Jack on the ground next to him and he said, "Look, son, look up there." And Jack said he could see, wasn't anything he could see very much, but in the direction that his dad pointed, he saw a disc. It was a white disc, he said, about the size of a half dollar. And it looked like it was sitting on top of a distant mountain. And his dad said, "That's what we've been looking for, son. The light of the world. That's the light of the world. Come on, let's follow it." And they did. They continued to climb up through the mine. And as they climbed toward that half-dollar-sized ring of light, it got larger and larger and larger. And that was indeed the way out, the way to the surface, the way through which they were saved. And that is an analogy of where we are today. Isaiah looked around him just like we look around us. And we have no trouble seeing all the things that threaten us. Terrorism then and now. Violence, unremitting war, anger, hatred, prejudice. Everywhere we look, tearing nations apart and ripping at the fabric of our own society. The list of concerns and issues goes on forever. But Isaiah's word to his people and to us is, there is hope for our world. There is a light to follow. It may only be the size of a half dollar now, but if you follow it, it gets larger and more compelling, and it is the way to life. Isaiah spoke of the vision that God has, the hope and the dream that God has for us. All that is required is that we work cooperatively with God to achieve God's great dream. Let go of our own sin, our own hatreds, and our own selfishness so that we can reach for and work for God's vision, which begins and ends in Jesus Christ and the wondrous cross. God's hope for us, God's dream for us, is not confined to some far distant future, but is available to us now if we want it enough to reach for it. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come, come now. Let us walk in the light of the Lord. Amen.